وَإِذَا ضَرَبْتُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْكُمْ جُنَاحٌ أَن تَقْصُرُوا مِنَ الصَّلَاةِ إِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَن يَفْتِنَكُمُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا إِنَّ الْكَافِرِينَ كَانُوا لَكُمْ عَدُوًّا مُبِينًا.
When you go forth journeying in the land, there is no blame on you if you shorten the prayer, especially if you fear that the unbelievers might cause you harm. Surely, the unbelievers are your open enemies. When you go forth journeying in the land, there is no blame on you if you shorten the prayer. Shortening prayers, qasr, while traveling in peacetime consists of praying 2 rakahs at those appointed times when one is normally required to pray 4 rakahs. The form of qasr during a state of war has not been specified. Prayers should therefore be performed as circumstances permit. People should pray in congregation if possible, otherwise individually. If it is not possible to turn towards the Qibla, one may keep the direction in which one happens to be facing. One may even pray while seated either on the back of an animal or on a vehicle. If actual bowing and prostrating are not possible, they may be performed with hand signals. If absolutely necessary, one may even pray while walking. One may also pray even though one's clothes are soiled with blood. If, in spite of these relaxations, a man still fails to manage to perform a prayer within the prescribed time, he may defer it, following the precedent set by the Prophet, peace be upon him, during the Battle of the Ditch. There is disagreement as to whether one should also perform the sunnah recommended prayers or confine oneself to the obligatory ones. It is established that the practice of the Prophet, peace be upon him, was to keep up the sunnah connected with the Fajr morning prayers and with the Witr in the Isha evening prayers. At the other prescribed times, he performed only the obligatory prayers. He did, however, perform the Nafl, supererogatory prayers, whenever he had the chance to do so, sometimes even while he was mounted. For this reason, Abdullah bin Umar expressed the opinion that one ought not to perform the sunnah prayers while traveling except for the sunnah in the Fajr prayers. But a majority of scholars consider both the performance and the omission of these prayers as equally permissible, leaving the matter entirely to the discretion of the individual. The opinion held by the Hanafi school, however, is that it is preferable for a traveler actually on the move to omit the sunnah prayers, but when he makes an overnight stop and is at his ease, even though the legal sense he may still be a traveler, their performance is preferable. According to some eminent jurists, journeys on which one may resort to qasr are those characterized as being fi sabilillah, in the cause of God, such as military expeditions, pilgrimage, the quest for knowledge, and so on. This is the judgment of Abdullah bin Umar, Abdullah bin Masud, and Atta. On the other hand, Shafi and Ahmad bin Hanbal are of the view that such permission extends to all journeys undertaken for lawful purposes, though not to those undertaken for unlawful purposes. Indeed, if one travels for illegitimate purposes, one has no right whatever to benefit from the relaxation of qasr. Hanafi jurists, however, do not connect qasr with the purpose of the journey. They consider it lawful on all journeys, regardless of the purposes for which they are undertaken. They hold that a traveler may be either rewarded or punished by God, depending on his purpose in traveling. That, however, has nothing to do with the permissibility of qasr. Other eminent jurists have inferred from the words, "and there is no blame on you," that qasr is not obligatory for a traveler, it is merely permitted. A person may avail himself of it if he chooses, and he may also perform his prayers normally if he so wishes. This is the view of Shafi, even though he considers qasr recommended and holds its omission to be tantamount to failure to adopt the preferable alternative. According to Ahmad bin Hanbal, however, while qasr is not obligatory, its omission falls under the category of disapproved acts. In Abu Hanifa's opinion, qasr is obligatory, and according to one report, Malik is of the same opinion. It is established by the hadith that the Prophet, peace be upon him, always shortened his prayers during his journeys. There is no reliable tradition to the effect that the Prophet, peace be upon him, ever prayed 4 full rakahs in these circumstances. Ibn Umar states that he accompanied the Prophet, peace be upon him, as well as Abu Bakr, Umar, and Uthman on their journeys, and never saw any of them fail to shorten their prayers. A number of authentic traditions have come down from Ibn Abbas and several other companions corroborate this. When Uthman prayed 4 rak'ahs in Mina on the occasion of Hajj, some companions objected to his not shortening the prayer. Uthman convinced them that he had not made any mistake in so doing by arguing that he had got married in Mecca and he had heard from the Prophet, peace be upon him, that the place a person married in was in a sense his home. In that respect, he was therefore not a traveler. In opposition to these numerous traditions are two from Aisha, which indicate that it is equally valid both to shorten the prayers and to do them in full. These traditions, however, have weak links in their transmission and are also opposed to the authenticated practice of Aisha herself. It is also true that there are intermediary states between travel and non-travel. During a temporary stop, it is quite proper for a man to shorten his prayers on some occasions and on others to complete them. It depends upon the circumstances. It is probably in this context that Aisha states that the Prophet, peace be upon him, sometimes shortened his prayers and sometimes performed them in full. The Quranic expression in the verse, "There shall be no blame," also occurs in the Quranic verse on the ritual of running between Safa and Marwa. The actual words used in both verses apparently mean that these acts were not blameworthy, even though the running, as we know, as part of the prescribed rites of pilgrimage and is obligatory. We can appreciate the significance of both these Quranic verses if we remember that the purpose in each case is to dispel the misunderstanding that the acts concerned might either entail some sin or jeopardize a man's reward. Another question in regard to qasr is, what is the minimum traveling distance in which prayers may be shortened? The Zahiri school recognizes no limit at all. Any traveling validates the shortening of prayers. According to Malik, however, one may not shorten prayers if the distance involved is either less than 48 miles, 77 kilometers, or involves traveling for less than a day and a night. This is also the opinion of Ahmed bin Hanbal and Ibn Abbas, and a statement in support of it has also come down from Shafi. The companion Anas considers it permissible to shorten prayers if the traveling distance is 15 miles. Uzay, Zuhri, and Umar consider one day's traveling to be sufficient. Hassan al-Basri says that the journey should be 2 days long, and Abu Yusuf says that it should be more than 2 days. According to Abu Hanifa, one may shorten the prayers on any journey in which one has to travel for 3 days either on foot or by camel, for instance, a distance of 18 farsakh. Ibn Umar, Ibn Masud, and Uthman agree with this view. If one stops over en route to one's destination, how long may one stay in one place and still be allowed to shorten one's prayers? On this question too, a variety of opinions have been expressed. Ahmed bin Hanbal is of the opinion that if a man decides to stay for 4 days, he should perform his prayers in full. Malik and Shafi are of the opinion that a man may not shorten his prayers if he decides to stay at a place for more than 4 days. Uzay and Abu Hanifa are respectively of the opinion that if a person intends to stay at a place for more than 13 or 15 days, he should pray in full. No categorical injunction has come down from the Prophet, peace be upon him, on this matter. All jurists agree, however, that if a man has been held up somewhere and cannot proceed because of some constraint, he may shorten his prayers indefinitely, provided he is in a constant state of readiness to undertake the journey back to his home as soon as the constraint is removed. Instances are reported of companions who continue to shorten their prayers for 2 years in this kind of circumstance. Treating the situation of a prisoner as analogous to this, Ahmed bin Hanbal holds that he may shorten his prayers throughout the period of his imprisonment, especially if you fear that the unbelievers might cause you harm. The Zahiris and Khawarij have interpreted this to signify that the injunction of shortening prayers is confined to wartime alone, and that it is against the Quran to shorten prayers while traveling in peacetime. But it is established by an authentic tradition that when Umar mentioned this misgiving to the Prophet, peace be upon him, he said, "This is a charitable gift to you from God, so accept his charitable gift." It is more or less established by an overwhelmingly large number of traditions that the Prophet, peace be upon him, shortened his prayers in times of both war and peace. Ibn Abbas states categorically that the Prophet, peace be upon him, left Medina with the intention of performing pilgrimage to the Kaaba, and during this journey he prayed 2 rak'ahs instead of 4, even though he could have nothing to fear except God.
وَإِذَا كُنْتَ فِيهِمْ فَأَقَمْتَ لَهُمُ الصَّلَاةَ فَلْتَقُمْ طَائِفَةٌ مِّنْهُمْ مَعَكَ فَلْتَقُمْ طَائِفَةٌ مِّنْهُمْ مَعَكَ وَلْيَأْخُذُوا أَسْلِحَتَهُمْ فَإِذَا سَجَدُوا فَلْيَكُونُوا مِنْ وَرَائِكُمْ وَلْتَأْتِ طَائِفَةٌ أُخْرَى لَمْ يُصَلُّوا ولتأت طائفة أخرى لم يصلوا فليصلوا معك وليأخذوا حذرهم وأسلحتهم ود الذين كفروا لو تغفلون عن أسلحتكم وأمتعتكم فيميلون عليكم ميلة واحدة ولا جناح عليكم إن كان بكم أذى من مطر أو كنتم مرضى أن تضعوا أسلحتكم وخذوا حذركم إن الله أعد للكافرين عذابا مهينا.
O Messenger, if you are among the believers and rise in the state of war to lead the prayer for them, let a party of them stand with you to worship, keeping their arms. When they have performed their prostration, let them go behind you, and let another party who have not prayed pray with you, remaining on guard and keeping their arms. For the unbelievers love to see you heedless of your arms and your baggage, so that they might swoop upon you in a surprise attack. But there shall be no blame upon you if you were to lay aside your arms if you are either troubled by rain or are sick, but remain on guard. Surely Allah has prepared a humiliating chastisement for the unbelievers. O Messenger, if you are among the believers and rise in the state of war to lead the prayer for them. These words have led Abu Yusuf and Hassan bin Ziyad to the view that the prayer in a state of insecurity was confined to the time of the Prophet, peace be upon him, alone. There are numerous examples, however, where a Quranic injunction was addressed specifically to the Prophet, peace be upon him, yet holds good for the succeeding periods. Moreover, it is established that many outstanding companions also resorted to this form of prayer even after the death of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and there are no reports of disagreement on this question among the companions. Let a party of them stand with you to worship, keeping their arms. This injunction regarding prayer in a state of either fear or insecurity, Salatul Khawf, refers to the time when an enemy attack is anticipated, but the fighting has not yet begun. When fighting is taking place, the ruling of the Hanafi school is that prayer may be deferred. Malik and Thawri are of the opinion that if it is not possible to bow and prostrate in prayer, it is enough to perform these actions by means of signs. Shafi argues that should the need arise, one might even fight while still in the state of prayer. It is an established fact that on 4 occasions during the Battle of the Ditch, the Prophet, peace be upon him, missed prayers during the appointed times, but performed them subsequently in their correct sequence, even though the above-mentioned injunction regarding prayer in the state of insecurity had already been revealed. And let another party who have not prayed pray with you, remaining on guard and keeping their arms. The actual form of congregational prayer in the state of insecurity depends to a large extent on the actual state of the hostilities. The Prophet, peace be upon him, prayed variously under different conditions. A Muslim commander may use his discretion and adopt whichever of the following forms of prayer seems to him most in keeping with the actual circumstances of the conflict. 1. That a group of soldiers may pray behind the prayer leader while the rest take their positions against the enemy. When one rak'ah is completed, the first group may disperse to be replaced in prayer by those who were at battle stations and who now complete the second rak'ah behind the leader. In this way, the soldiers will have prayed one rak'ah each and the leader two rak'ahs. 2. That a group of soldiers may pray first and then another group may pray one rak'ah each behind the leader. Subsequently, each of the two groups comes in turn to complete the prayer by performing one rak'ah individually. In this way, each of the two groups will have prayed one rak'ah congregationally and one rak'ah individually. 3. That a group may pray two rak'ahs behind the leader, recite tashahhud, and finish the prayer by reciting the salutation. Then the second group may join the prayer behind the leader and complete it with him. Thus, the prayer leader will have prayed four rak'ahs and each of the two groups will have prayed two. 4. That a group may pray one rak'ah behind the leader. When the leader rises to pray the second rak'ah, those who have been following him may complete the second rak'ah by themselves, including the recitation of the tashahhud and salutation. Then the second group joins the prayer while the leader is in the second rak'ah. After the leader has finished his second rak'ah and his followers have prayed their first, the latter may rise and complete their prayer by performing the second rak'ah by themselves. In this case, the leader should prolong his standing in the second rak'ah of the prayer. The first form has been reported by Ibn Abbas, Jabir bin Abdullah, and Mujahid. The second form has been reported by Abdullah bin Masud and is the basis of the Hanafi ruling on this matter. The third form of the prayer has been adopted by Shafi and Malik with slight modification. The basis of this ruling is a tradition from Sahal bin Abi Hathma. There are certain other forms of prayer in the state of insecurity, details of which can be found in larger works of Islamic law. Surely, Allah has prepared a humiliating chastisement for the unbelievers. This is to emphasize that the precautions recommended here are among the measures which ought to be adopted with a view to minimizing losses and ensuring good results. Victory and defeat ultimately depend, however, on the will of God. So even while taking these precautionary measures, one should feel sure that God will humiliate those who are trying to extinguish His light.
فَإِذَا قَضَيْتُمُ الصَّلَاةَ فَاذْكُرُوا اللَّهَ قِيَامًا وَقُعُودًا وَعَلَى جُنُوبِكُمْ فَإِذَا اطْمَأْنَنْتُمْ فَأَقِيمُوا الصَّلَاةَ إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ كَانَتْ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ كِتَابًا مَّوْقُوتًا.
When you have finished the prayer, remember Allah standing and sitting and reclining. And when you become secure, perform the regular prayer. The prayer is enjoined upon the believers at stated times.
وَلَا تَهِنُوا فِي ابْتِغَاءِ الْقَوْمِ إِن تَكُونُوا تَأْلَمُونَ فَإِنَّهُمْ يَأْلَمُونَ إِن تَكُونُوا تَأْلَمُونَ فَإِنَّهُمْ يَأْلَمُونَ كَمَا تَأْلَمُونَ وَتَرْجُونَ مِنَ اللَّهِ مَا لَا يَرْجُونَ وَكَانَ اللَّهُ عَلِيمًا حَكِيمًا.
Do not be faint of heart in pursuing these people. If you happen to suffer harm, they too are suffering just as you are. While you may hope from Allah what they cannot hope for, Allah is all-knowing, all-wise. Do not be faint of heart in pursuing these people. This refers to those unbelievers who adamantly oppose the cause of Islam and the establishment of the Islamic order. While you may hope from Allah what they cannot hope for, it is astonishing that men of faith should not be prepared to endure the same degree of hardship for the sake of the truth as unbelievers do for the sake of falsehood. This is strange insofar as the latter merely seek the transient benefits of worldly life, whereas the faithful seek to please and secure the proximity of the Lord of the universe and look forward to everlasting rewards.